Okay, so this is a special segment for Look Forward. Last week we did an article when I had Scott in. We discussed an article about a liberal college professor who was, in fact, afraid of his liberal students, and we had an interesting conversation about that. So because of that conversation, it sparked off a number of other side conversations. So I thought what would be a good idea is to bring in some other perspectives on that conversation and article. So sitting in the room with me are three anonymous women, racially ambiguous women, AKA, what is it, Raw? So these women are sitting in, they are college professors, and they are here to give their perspective on this. So I guess I will just let you introduce yourselves as like one, two, and three or something like that. But ladies, it's nice to have you all three here.
It's very nice to be here, Jay.
Thanks for having us.
Ditto.
Ditto, okay. All right, so I guess we'll start with just I'll sort of give prompts and I'll just kind of back off and let you guys run.
You know, let me say something. You know what I was thinking with that article, and I only thought about it because, you know, we're three racially ambiguous women. And when I first saw the article, I wondered, okay, so he's like teaching in the Midwest. Right. I was like, I wonder if this is a white man. Like, that was, you know, it's an article about identity politics along with other things.
Right.
But he never kind of announced his perspective. Maybe that was done on purpose.
I assumed he was a white man.
I kind of did too.
I mean, here's the thing. You don't know. I mean, the name that he uses sounds like a white guy's name. It's like Slauser or something like that. But, it sounds European, but it very well could be, you know, anybody. It might not even be a man. It might be a woman. Like, you have no idea. So,
Banksy.
But I think this is probably a topic that affects...
You said Banksy.
All
it's Banksy.
I think it's a topic that affects any college professors. But that's just my opinion. What are your opinions? And we'll start with you and go around. What are your opinions as far as, in a general standpoint? Do you think that this article is fair as far as, you know, whether or not liberal students have gone too far? Is that a valid statement?
Well, okay. So having taught in higher education for a long time now, for about 15 years. I've definitely seen a change in the type of student that we have in higher ed, and a definite increase in being careful of what is said. And Title IX, which is the sexual harassment in education specifications, and worries about lawsuits. That has definitely increased over the years. So I do think that there's some validity in that. I will say I teach in a very liberal environment. So some of the things that this person talked about in the article, I did not relate to. And then others I thought I didn't relate to until I really thought about it. And I realized that there is an increasing awareness of what we say and how we say it, and not disenfranchising those who are in a place of privilege and power.
Okay. Number two.
Thing two says, so our department, I have not taught in higher ed that long.
Right.
So I think the place in which I teach very much values each person's story, right? Like, a huge part of what we do is like get in contact with who you are, know who you are, work from that place of who you are. That's a lot about identity politics, right? Like, right. It starts in that place. And I think there is something really relevant about that, to be able to speak from your lived experience. But then what, right? Knowing that your lived experience is only one truth. It resonated, parts of it resonated. But I think, I do think It's only the responsibility of those in higher ed to fight against what he's talking about. Like, I thought it was a bit of a kind of pussy move a little. Oh, there's that word again.
There's that word. Glad you're anonymous.
That's right. Thing too. I don't know. I thought he was kind of like a little like kind of like pussy-ish. Like, yeah, dude, like your job is to kind of make them read what they don't want to read and make them have the conversations they don't want to have. I don't know. Maybe it's like I'm not worried about getting fired right now. So maybe that's why I'm saying that.
Right. Your opinion, number three.
Anonymous three. I could answer a few things, but just to follow up with what you started with there is I thought that it is our place to teach students how to engage in conversations, And then that we have that opportunity. Where else are they going to get the skills to engage in conversations that they may not be willing to talk about? So I thought that. I'm also new to higher ed, and I have experience working in public schools, and there were particular positions that as public school teachers we had to have. For example, the one that was particularly memorable is the position on, how can I say it, your reproductive choices.
Mm-hmm. Pro-choice?
Sex, having sex. Yes, how to keep from getting pregnant.
Okay.
Okay, it was not that you could suggest be on the pill, use condoms, the position had to be abstinence. And that was particularly challenging for me.
From the school district?
From the school district.
Wow.
I mean, we sat in meetings, and that was the official position of the school district.
Hmm. That is, that is something.
Right?
Right.
But I have experienced where I work now, students that aren't willing to listen or don't even fully listen to an argument before countering the argument. And then their counter argument has nothing to do with the original topic to begin with.
Right.
And so being new in higher ed, I'm wondering and working on how to, you know, nuance that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Into a productive conversation.
I mean, the truth is, though, we don't deal in complexities. Like, Americans are not into, like, nuance. Like, it's either or. It's black or white. You're liberal or conservative. Like, it's very, like...
Right. I agree with that.
You know, and when I think about these students have been raised, and we've spoken about this, in a super testified, I don't even know if that's the word, overly tested environment. So they're coming in and they're like, I want to know what the right answer is. I've decided this is the right answer and I'm going to live in that right answer. You know, like they are. They're very black or white.
Overly testified. I testify.
No singing on the internet.
You know, there was no singing ever in my life, I have to tell you.
That is also correct.
There was one year when a colleague and I, we were presenting the books for the semester to our graduate students, and we were talking about each book and each author and going through what we thought was strong in the book and that there were aspects that we disagreed with. And there literally one student raised her hand and said, but tell us what to believe. They couldn't understand why we would give them books that we didn't agree with. And we had to say, this is for you to draw your own conclusion. This is for you to develop your own belief system and your own argument for what you stand for. We are not here to create copies of ourselves. That's not our goal. And that was the moment when I realized that we are in the overly testified world of No Child Left Behind, where the millennials were raised and educated where there's a right answer and a wrong answer and you circle it in on a bubble sheet and that's it. And you learn to read a textbook by going to the questions at the end of the chapter and finding the answers rather than reading the chapter.
Or questioning the chapter or reading the chapter.
Exactly.
And being like, who wrote this? For what purpose? What are they trying to say? Who's the audience that they're, you know?
What's their agenda or what's their lens? Exactly. Exactly. And it was all the way to graduate school where they haven't been asked to do that, which blows my mind.
Hmm. Well, okay. So I know, I think that's a wonderful place to start. That's a lot. So I guess my question is, you guys are sort of seeing, like, at least the beginning of this article, we talked offline, there's two major parts to this, and one of them being students as customers. Mm-hmm. And because it's becoming more of a customer-driven environment, colleges, it changes the way in which you teach. Is that something that you found? And this might not even be necessarily higher ed, but mm-hmm. I feel like at least where we are in Baltimore City, you know, even the head of public schools, high school and below are even considered like the CEO of schools. That's mm-hmm. the head and things like that. Do you think that we all know it's changed, obviously, but what is the effect of that change? Has it been more positive, negative, a little bit of both, et cetera?
Well, there's this one woman who is affiliated with a college and acts as a mentor, but is not actually faculty, but has become very politically motivated and has been publicly demonstrating a lot based on her beliefs. And a top administrator at the college aired concern about this person's viability in the profession. And whether or not this person needed to kind of simmer down a little bit. And I think it all comes from less about CEO personally. I think it's more about the litigious society that we live in, and that schools are so concerned about whether or not a student is going to, or students' parents, I should say, are going to sue the college,
right,
rather than about whether or not it's appropriate that this student needs to repeat a class.
I mean, here's this kind of like weird, and I haven't fully thought this out, right? So kind of go with me. There's something I think positive and interesting about this idea that each person comes to consume education, right? And that the education should satisfy that person. Like, there's something about that I agree with, that resonates with me, especially as somebody who did not see themselves in what they learned for a long time, right? So I think there is something in, like, let's make this person invested in their education, right? Like a direct connection between what you're teaching and who this person is, that in some ways kind of links to identity politics, right?
Absolutely.
That I think there is something valuable in that. I think where it becomes, construed is that it's not a back and forth, right? It becomes like, I'm here to like serve you almost, right? Where it should be like, I'm looking at you, looking who you are, what I can bring to the table as a person who's lived more and studied more, because that's really what we have over our students. We've lived more, we've studied more, you know? Yeah. I don't know how to figure out the freaking chalky. They got to tell me how to connect to the whatever, right? Yeah. But I have this lived experience. So I think something becomes off balance there, that it becomes about like a transaction more so than an exchange. But I think there is something interesting and something that that is kind of like badass about, like, no, I want education to please me in some sort of way. Mm-hmm. I kind of like that a little mm-hmm. bit, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I just thought of the idea, just the word consuming, the mm-hmm. idea of what is it that you're coming to school to do? Are you coming to school to be fed something mm-hmm. by somebody else, or are you coming to school to create your own ideas and make sense mm-hmm. of mm-hmm. your own reality in connection to others? You know, are you here to construct new knowledge? So mm-hmm. I just thought of that when you said mm-hmm. consumers. Mm-hmm. Are they here to ingest something or come up with something new?
It's interesting, Jay, you talked about the democratization of the internet in the right. discussion with Scott. And when Thing 2 was talking, it made me think about, I wonder, this is a generation who doesn't know life without the internet, right? Doesn't know life without going to the World Wide Web and finding 100 other people who believe whatever asinine bullshit they believe, mm-hmm. right? No mm-hmm. matter what it is, no matter how like off the wall, crazy town it is, mm-hmm. they can find at least 100 people who will agree with what they have to say.
Pepe the Frog.
What'd you say?
Pepe the Frog. I just learned who that was. Pepe the Frog. It's
That's a later. I don't even know what Pepe Le Frog is, but it makes me think about like, okay, so these kids, these young adults, their entire life have been validated with no matter what thought they've ever had. And it has validated their identity. It has validated their voice. It has validated their opinion, which on one hand is pretty awesome. You know, like we've really moved far away from the 1950s where there was a belief system. There was a positivistic view of what is right and what is wrong. Mm-hmm. And now we realize it's intersectionality of realities. It's a multiplicity of truths. But they come into a classroom, and if the teacher invalidates something they say or disagrees with something they believe, I wonder if they've ever been given the skills to negotiate that.
I mean, I think that's probably the crux of the issue, right? You know, these kids, as if, you know,
but
as
I don't think it's just the kids.
No, I don't think it's just the kids, but I think that much like the conversation Scott and I were having, I do think that the level of parenting has allowed them to not have, they literally don't have the skills to do
it. Okay, I'm going
to
push back. I think this professor's a wuss. I think this professor's a little bit of like a wuss.
But like the notion of like being fired, you don't think that's legit?
I think that, oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I mean, it might be legit, but I think,
I mean, you
you're
got,
intellectual,
you,
right?
I know, like, the
that's
three
what
of
you
are
in the game for, was to be an intellectual, right? Right. And if you're like, if you have, I don't know, like, it seems a little bit to me like a scapegoat to be like, oh, these little kids don't, and I know, right? I know. But I think part of your, I wonder how this person interacts in the classroom. I wonder, I think that's another part of the story, is who are you as, how do you present yourself as the guide, the facilitator, the educator, the teacher, to create that? Because I think each of us can have stories where we have not agreed with the students, or where we walked away being like, oops, maybe I really insulted you, right? But you come back and then you engage in a different way. So I don't know. I'm just, I kind of have a hard time. I feel like a little bit we're letting this guy off the hook a little easily.
Okay.
You know, I think you're right. Like, as you were talking, I was just thinking about, I used to teach at another institution that was like a really top institution of higher ed. And I had a meeting with the vice president of the college, and I completely disagreed with something she was saying. And I told her that. And I remember thinking, oh shit, what did I just do? I just disagreed with the vice president of the college. But the thing is in my disagreement, I supported why I disagreed with her with experience, with research, with a context, right? And I didn't get fired. And I wonder if part of his article is that we are so damn scared of being reprimanded for something that may not be popular. And that's why we don't have sit-ins in Washington anymore. And that's why we don't have activists in the world, because people are so afraid if they say the wrong thing, us as thing one, two, and three, you know, that, right, that we may suffer repercussions from what we actually deeply believe.
No, but the question is, and I understand that going to bat against, you know, someone who's higher than you, but what happens when the student has the issue with something and saying, oh, well, I'm, because that's the big crux, actually, mm-hmm, that's probably their big crux of the article, is millennials saying, I am personally offended.
But
internalize.
You're the educator. It. It's your job to educate these students.
Right,
right.
Right. No, I understand it. But what I'm saying is, if the kid comes from a perspective of like, I've been offended for X reason, like whatever that reason, mm-hmm, is, and it, you know, some, you know, let's say it's an identity politics thing. Let's say it's because they're a liberal and it's a conservative point, or vice versa. It doesn't matter. But they're deeply personally offended. Do you think that is, like, how do you deal with that?
I actually have a story that is perfect for this.
Okay.
So I was teaching. I have two. I think this one is better. I was teaching, and we had a visitor come to the classroom. And the visitor comes in, and everyone welcomes the visitor, and he walks out. And the visitor prompted a different type of conversation. So the visitor came in, and I said, if you guys want to do this in Baltimore City, we need to have different types of conversation, right? So one of the students raised her hand. She said, well, can we have those conversations? And so we started to have a conversation, and it was probably the first time, like I said, I'm very new to higher ed. It was the first time that I think I felt like, okay, I'm going to tell these kids what I really feel. Like, I'm just going to kind of lay it out there. I'm going to say it, right? And I said it. We have one racially mixed child in the class, right? And so, like, I looked at her and I made a joke, right? And I made the joke as, like, the one black lady in the room. And I was like, do you want to give us your perspective as the one black girl in the room? I thought that shit was hilarious, right?
Right? Nope.
Everybody was like, so then afterwards, two students come to
Sorry for the thunder noise. Go ahead.
We're causing thunder because we're so raw. Two students come, right? And one is like very cute. She's like, I've been working on saying what I feel when I feel it. So I wrote you this note. Maybe we
So I didn't have to say it to you.
Maybe we can have a meeting later. And I'm like, oh shit, fuck, I offended her. I'm like, okay, you know, set up the meeting with her. Then comes the one black child in the class who, and she's like, hey, can we have a meeting? And I'm like, wow, I've offended the whole freaking class. Well, it turned out that the girl who came to have the first meeting with me, who was ended up being Caucasian, we actually had a really great meeting. And her first question was, why did you feel like you could say those things? And I think it had given me a minute to kind of think of it for myself. Like, okay, what is this going to look like? And she really came from a place.
Our dog is afraid of the thunder. Yes. I apologize.
Yeah, sorry for the noise.
So she came from a place where she really wanted to know, like, what my perspective was. Like, she was like, why do you feel this way? Like, what made you feel like you could say these things? And it really became an exchange at that point. Like, it became a back and forth where I was hearing her perspective and she was like, look, I'm a Southern white girl. Like, I would never say that. And I'm right. Like, this is who I am. And this is why this is, for me, okay to have these kind of conversations.
Did you have any major pushback from her or no?
She did push back. Like, she was like, why did you call her a black girl if she's half white? You know? And it was a great question. And, like, it became, right. Like, seriously, not for nothing. It became, like, a teachable moment. Like, I had to articulate why I believe the way I believe. And then, you know, the black girl came and had a meeting with me. And she kind of, like, put me in my place. Like, it was hilarious. Like, I was, you know, getting ready to be, like, the professor who's having the meeting with the child. Yeah. And she basically was like, look, dude, stop trying to be somebody else. Just, like, be who you are. We need you to be who you are, you know? So I think, like, in those moments, I think part of this article is, like, identity is real. Like, identity politics are real, right? Like, we have gotten over modernity, right? We know that it's not just one right and wrong. It's not just one perspective. And with all these other perspectives, there also needs to be some freaking humor. Like, I was just like, yeah, dude, sorry. Did I put you out? Did I make you feel uncomfortable? Because I thought that shit was hilarious. And so I think I came from a place where I was like, this is my intention. This is why I'm saying these things to you and why it's important to me as an educator, that it created a space, I feel like, where we could have those conversations. That's why I keep being like, who is this teacher who can't create those spaces to have those conversations?
I'm also wondering, though, if that is... I'm also wondering, though, if that's a symptom of where we work.
Yeah, yeah.
That it didn't go further than a conversation, you know, in your office, where you did have the opportunity to have this conversation and listen to each other's perspectives and have a conversation that seemed to be really meaningful and, you know, all the parties learned. But I wonder if that, how that would go over it in other schools.
You know, I also, to build on that thing three, We all have the privilege and benefit of being full-time faculty. And we have times where we are in the department, in our offices, where students can come drop in, where we can eat lunch with them, where we have a lot of downtime, where we're interacting in a non-academic way. And I try to think about, what if I was an adjunct faculty member and I... swooped in for an evening class after my day job, and I could stay maybe 30 minutes after class to have a conversation with somebody, but I don't have that off time to build a deep and lasting relationship and trust, if that might be different, and if that might have shown up in the course evaluation, whereas it might not with one of us because they have a bigger context mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. where we're coming from. Mm-hmm. And we are all non-white. And I think that there is a privilege to being especially racially ambiguous because we can speak from a place of quote-unquote knowing, mm-hmm. but also from an outsider-insider perspective.
Mm-hmm. Not be so threatening.
And not be so threatening. Mm-hmm. Then, I mean, it's funny, as I read that article, maybe it's because of the picture at the top of it. I just assumed it was a white male.
Yeah, me too. I did too.
Writing that article.
It was because it was Midwest. That's why.
Maybe that's why.
Let's see. Moving on from there, do you think that there is a... Do you guys think that, as far as boat rocking is concerned, do you feel the need, like, to make sure you sort of stay on the straight and narrow as professors? Do you feel that you have to, or can you stray?
My boss strays all the time, so I feel like if she can do it, I can. You know, that's
right.
Kind of what I feel like.
Okay, what about you?
Since where we work is pretty liberal, straying is kind of the norm.
It would be going straight.
Yeah, straying might be conservative values.
Conservative values would be straying.
But, you know, I'm going to say, like, I'm all for identity politics, but I'm also, like, we kind of take ourselves a little too seriously mm-hmm. sometimes. Like, I do agree right. that it's become, like, we've become so politically correct that it's like fair. And it is an age thing, right? I think my daughter is like super aware of.
And your daughter is how old?
16. Okay. She's like super aware. And like, she corrects me all the time. And I'm like, that's hilarious. Oh, wait, it's not hilarious anymore. Sorry. In 1980, it was hilarious. Yeah. You
know? They did movies about this.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. You don't want to listen to that rap song because it's no longer funny. Oh, sorry. Yeah. But I do think there is something where, and I am like hugely into like who I am, what's the story that I'm trying to tell, where do we come from, you know, who has power, what does power look like? But I do think it's, again, I think it's very complex. I think there are a lot of layers to it.
Well, I mean, I feel like it's our obligation as educators to be change agents, period. And the minute we start to bow our heads and what's that called? Put your tail between our legs.
ESOL 1, ESOL 2,
child
ESOL
of an
3.
Immigrant. you know, the minute we start doing that, we really lose what education is about. And it's not until you get to a place of discomfort that I think real learning actually happens.
Right.
And he in this, or mm-hmm. the person in this article was saying that it's the discomfort that students are afraid of. And of course they're afraid of it.
But he's
That's
afraid
why
of,
they're in school. They're
but
in
he's afraid of it too.
Right, but they're paying tuition to come to a school to push them beyond where they already are. Otherwise, why would they be coming to school if right. they already know the answer?
Right. Now, I'll push back a little bit on that. I don't think that necessarily he or she, who knows, but
they,
that they're afraid because they weren't, or that they've always been afraid because they made a point that it has changed over time. Mm-hmm. So they are changing.
But they're like becoming
the
student right now. Like they're becoming what they're like complaining about. Right.
Right. But at the same time, the dynamic has completely changed. Right. I mean, the dynamic between the power of the student versus the power of the professor. When you are more business focused, well, if you're looking at it from a business perspective, the customer's always right is the mantra, right? So if the customer isn't happy, how do you change mm-hmm. the curriculum? And this is why I don't think education should be treated like a business is or that hardcore like a business, because if the customer is always right, then why is the professor there?
Mm-hmm. Tell you what, we're in freaking really big trouble if education becomes about being safe. Like, and if the professor, if this guy is genuinely this scared, like.
And it doesn't sound him. It sounds like a lot of his colleagues.
I mean, it is changing, but like either you're going to be that resistance, right? You're going to be the thing that's resisting what's happening, or you're going to go along and be in fear. And then you're kind of useless at that point. Then you're just like,
oh, I agree
why are you
that.
There?
Yeah.
I think about that study that the teacher did, the brown eyed, blue eyed study in the 50s. And if you haven't seen this, go to YouTube and just search for brown eyed, blue eyed. But where one day all of the blue-eyed kids had to wear a special collar, and they were told they were dumber, and they were told they were inadequate, and oh my God, look at that blue-eyed person with her head on the table. There you go. Blue-eyed people are lazier than brown-eyed people. And then the roles reversed the next day, and the parents were watching this from an observation room and laughing along as their child was crying. But it was an amazing experiment where they really embodied the discomfort of being a disenfranchised person in this community. And I show it to my students, and every time I show it, somebody always brings up, oh my God, can you imagine if a teacher did it today? And that teacher would probably be brought in front of the school board.
Oh, without a doubt. Absolutely.
Thing number three, you look like you're about to say something.
I have a couple of things that I'm thinking about. So, this is something I just started thinking about today, as the article was read just maybe an hour ago. So I typically take a little while to think about things, play through the arguments, play through different sides. But it took me to this question. It took me to the question of, why do we discuss different ideas? Why do we want to have these different conversations? Why should we listen to opinions that we might think are ignorant? Because something else that I've recently heard, listening to podcasts, seeking out and listening to podcasts, dismissing an idea when it really could be an opportunity to teach that person as to why there's a different opinion. Like people scoffing, like, oh, here's this story again. Well, she obviously needs to be corrected. Can somebody please tell this woman why she not corrected, but what she's not understanding as part of her, or what she's not getting as part of her overall understanding.
Right.
Why could you answer your own question?
Typically,
Esau 3.
I wanted to put that out. I love Esau 1 and Esau 2, Esau 3. I'd have to think about it, but the first thing that comes to mind, and
I don't know. Can we say Esau? Are we going to get in trouble for that?
Is that politically incorrect?
Oh, shoot.
Don't worry. There's no one's going to get in trouble on this show.
And FYI, Esau means English as his second language. No.
Yes.
Yeah, where's the O? Where's the O come from? Oh, it's ESL.
ESL. Yeah.
We just add the O.
No, back in the day it was ESL, though, but ESL. I don't remember what the
O was.
English
sometimes.
Of language.
A language.
Of language.
I love it. English second of language. Okay, ESL 3.
All right, so I'd like to pose that question to you two, and I'll give you my answer first. But pose that question to you three.
I'm here as well. Yes.
All right, so... Why should we discuss different ideas? I mean, the only thing I could think of right now is that it's part of living in a community with other people. If we're going to live together and be governed together, that different perspectives should be heard and considered.
That's I think for me, so the whole thing with like DR and Haiti, like when it first, hit first world attention. I was like, oh my God, I know they're horrible. Dominican Republic's horrible. It's my country. I know. And I purposely had to seek out, well, actually, part of it was that family back in DR was like, no, here's another perspective. But I had to do my homework and look at the other perspective. And I think for me, it's important to hear another perspective because I don't know everything, right? Because I am... what Jay was talking about, these people that live in that constant, I am so like passionate about what I believe to be true that I think the older I get, the more I'm like, oh, but this is my truth. And there are multiple struggles and they actually shouldn't be, put against each other. So I need to hear another perspective because I need to grow myself. I know that as much as what I believe, and I believe it full force, I also know I just don't know everything, and
but your truth does not invalidate my truth. But that's where it goes back to the idea of identity politics, where the author, he, she, author of the Here, hold on. We're busy pouring wine. Sorry.
Go ahead.
The author of the article was saying that, you know, here's this issue with identity politics where people are so consumed with their own identity and their own truth that they aren't willing to question it. Right. And they're not willing to counter it. So even though your truth does not invalidate my truth, that doesn't mean that your truth might not bring my truth into question.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And if I'm a Southerner who wants to hang the Confederate flag and I want to say that it has nothing to do with slavery, your truth, based on facts and history, might help me reconsider my truth.
Right. But I think I would push back a little bit and say that instead of using the word truth, that I would use the word opinion.
Or right? Lens. What about lens?
Lens is a better phrase, right? Because
well, you know, like truth.
I hate the truth. I can't even handle it. So, no, it's, I mean, there is, you know, to say, well, you know, I have a truth and you have a truth on the same topic, you know, on the exact same topic. No, there are things that are right and there are things that are wrong. However,
I don't agree with that.
Sure.
I think
sky is blue. Like, that's not up for debate. Like, that there are things that I think are universal truths.
How positivistic of you, Jay.
Yeah, I look, and that's where you could argue that that's more of a conservative side of me. But like, if you're rooting, there are certain things that you have to root in some level of fact, and there are certain things that are open for interpretation. You could say the Confederate flag is a perfect example. You could say, you know, my opinion, because the arguments are not based, they're generally not based on truth or not truth. They're based on opinion. Well, I think we should be able to fly the Confederate flag because my family died, you know, carrying that flag. Probably not, but they did. Okay. You know,
not your family, Black Jay.
Yeah. Not my family, but I'm saying like somebody's family in the South could say that, right? If they're from Virginia. But at the same time, me saying that the flag should be taken down because it represents, you know, an insurrection, you know, a government that was trying to destroy, a country that was trying to destroy the United States, me saying that, that is an actual fact. You saying that it should be kept up because your family, whatever, that's just a personal opinion. Like, that doesn't generate
what if they say that should be kept up because my family fought in the war? Then it becomes a fact.
Well, it does become a fact, but okay, that's probably a poor example of the way I said it, but it becomes a fact if we're talking about like the actual situation, which is why should it be taken down over a state capitol? It should be taken down because it was not the U.S. government, blah blah blah. It represents the destruction of the United States.
Correct.
If the other side goes, no, it doesn't. But that's one is
inaccurate.
True. Yeah, one is accurate and one is simply not accurate.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I feel like there's some gray area. So I wrote a very strongly worded letter to Governor Haley of South Carolina.
Yes.
And fact.
Another racially ambiguous woman. Yes.
No, she's pretty clearly fucking South Asian.
Oh, I've never seen this woman.
Oh, yeah, she's South Asian American.
I feel like a lot of people in South Carolina don't realize that.
Okay. Well, yeah, true.
Now they know.
Now they know. So
you heard
fact,
it on Raw.
Yeah. So fact, I quoted directly from the Articles of Confederation for South Carolina, where the very first line of it was rooting the Confederacy in slavery. Right? Fact. Now, my truth, my personal truth, was the part of the letter where I said, shame on you, my fellow South Asian American, for not, as a brown person in America, not taking into consideration what this really means for all brown people in America.
Maybe she doesn't consider herself a brown person.
Well, so then let's bring in Bobby Jindal, who I'm sad to say is also my people's, who has a portrait of himself in the Louisiana, outside of his office in Louisiana, where he's painted looking like a fully Caucasian, light-skinned Caucasian person. Now, I will say, Indians very much argue that they are Caucasian, just with browner skin. So I won, not all, some, I should say some Indians, some South Asians.
Yeah, we'll get a letter for that.
Yeah, I know. You'll get a couple letters for that. You can blame it on Raw. But I guess what I'm saying in a very long-winded way is there was truth, right, fact, in my quote of the Articles of Confederation, but there was also my truth in the lens I speak from as a South Asian American, trying to shame Governor Haley as a fellow South Asian American. And I like to think I single-handedly helped her take down that
they voted
flag.
Hey, they voted today to take it down.
Look, I will say I really don't know like what the textbook definition of liberal or conservative is. I'm gonna be quite honest.
Sure.
But I wonder, in becoming so liberal, if we're just becoming another version of being conservative. Like, you have to be this, and you have to believe this, and you have to shop here, and you can't do this.
Well, it's and that's the thing is, you know, people look at the political spectrum as like one line, and you're either on the left or you're on the right. But it's not really that. It just curves. Once you go too far the other way, you start to touch against the other side, right? You just become more extreme until it's like, wait, how did we get back here? You know, it's like you can't go to this grocery store, like you said. You can't watch these old TV shows. You can't do this X, Y, and Z. It's like
when did I become a libertarian?
Yeah.
Don't say that word.
Like
that word.
Right. Like we can't.
Don't hang that flag.
Right. You can't hang the flag. You can't do those things. And it's like, while I don't necessarily defend those ideas, I defend the ideal that you should be able to, like, I defend the idea that you should be able to be a jerk. Like, you should. Like, that's the country in which we live in, you know. So it's fine. I don't necessarily have to be okay with it, but it's okay for you to be a jerk. So let's quickly go
quick question before we move on.
Yeah.
So is the truth, like, that you say your truth, is that truth malleable? Can it change based on what you learn about other people's truths?
Mm-hmm.
So the truth.
I think it should.
The truth.
Your truth.
It's not an absolute truth.
No.
It's or maybe, I guess I use the word my truth, but it's my lens. It's what I'm a social constructivist. So I believe that everything I believe is based upon my, you know, the collection of interactions I have with people and experiences in my life. So that becomes my truth. And my truth, I mean, when I graduated high school in 1992, I believed I literally didn't know any gay people. I really believed I did not know one gay person. Now I realize
the skies are opening up.
I know, the thunder's crazy. Now I truly know that I did, but we just didn't talk about it back then, right? But my truth at that time was, through my experiences, I thought I hadn't known anybody who was gay. Oh, our poor dog is jumping on everybody's lap.
He's being crazy. I don't know. Let's move on from there. Let's talk about social justice, and then we'll wrap up.
Let's just talk about social
justice.
It's
just no big deal.
Like, little
should take about like two, 3 minutes.
Yeah. A light touch on social justice
and racism and everything else in America. So one of the quotes in the article is, the real problem is a simplistic, unworkable, and ultimately stifling conception of social justice. Now, do you find that statement? I mean, I guess, does everybody get what they're saying?
Say it one more time.
I was about to say, please repeat that.
Thing number three needs to write it down as you speak.
Yeah. The real problem is a simplistic, unworkable, and ultimately stifling conception of social justice.
I would have appreciated a definition, but what this simplistic definition?
We are
is.
Academics. Thank you very much.
Need a citation.
APA
format.
So I get from that what I glean is, these kids are so rigid in their feelings about, you know, whatever. They're so internalized to, you know, being offended by these things or possibly being offended, that they have a completely stifled version of what social justice is when something happens. Like, oh, Donald Trump said some terrible things about Mexicans. Kids get on Twitter and they're like, Donald Trump sucks. I'm a social justice warrior. Like,
yeah, then
that's
you
it.
Buy that suit that Donald Trump made that was made in Mexico, and you don't even know.
Right, exactly. So, and that goes to the conversation I had with Scott about the democratization of, you know, because of the internet. Does the internet cause us to be easy as far as social justice and just kind of like not really do anything? Or is there a real ability to do something and we're just not taking advantage, or maybe we're just ignoring that as a bigger issue? No thoughts right now?
I mean, I think, yes, there's this very kind of, I mean, talking about things is not going to solve it. And mind, I love talking. We talk a lot.
Right.
But, you know, I personally have felt frustrated in our university that we talk a lot. And talking makes everybody feel great. But, like, then what? You know? So, yeah, I totally see that.
Sorry. Good Lord.
You can't control the weather yet?
Not yet. We're working on it.
Talking is only effective if it's followed up by action.
And I mean, that was a huge premise of what he was talking about, too.
Do you, like, but I mean, and I agree with that. I mean, like, I'm on Twitter all the time. I certainly see this notion of like, yeah, we're going to stop this thing from happening by using 140 characters. Like, okay, then you're going to go outside and do it? Like, nah, I already tweeted about it. That's enough. I retweeted, too. So, like, that's pretty good. So,
but I think it's what you said, that like that awareness that maybe comes with age, maybe comes, I don't know, maybe they'll get it when they get older, that it does happen incrementally. And I think, I mean, I see it for myself. When I was young, I was just like, I'm tearing down the whole freaking house right now. I'm setting fire to everything. And now I'm like, okay, the fact that I work in this university, that's a small change. That's progress, right? Like, it happens very slowly. And I think what action looks like is not like, it's not setting it on fire. Like, it's not action is
right.
Much
it's slower.
Like you said in the previous podcast, slower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think there is a notion of like the 1970s where people were like burning bras and like kicking ass and taking names. Like, but I think that time is done. Like, I don't think.
But
those
even
things,
that, I mean.
But I think those things, like when you went out into the, like, because the level of communication between individuals was impossible over great spans of space. Like, you couldn't really gather people in Chicago if you were in New York or if you were in California to be like, all right, let's go fight the man. Like, you had to literally go into the street and stand together and be like, okay, we're protesting. Now, you can talk to people. I talk to people all the time halfway across the world, and you can just all do a hashtag and then go, yeah, you know, XYZ sucks, Donald Trump's the worst, and then people just go, okay, and then we're done.
Yeah, I'm engaged.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, I'm going to push back a little bit.
I'm not saying that that's 100%, and that's what I'm asking, is there more there?
Yeah, let me push back.
Okay.
Burning bras in the 60s in front of a camera is the same as retweeting today. Look at Egypt. Look at what Twitter did. Look what social media has done to create major social and political uprisings in different parts of the world. You know, right. I think about when...
But it's like our city, right? So what happens when the cameras leave? I think that's the real work, right? Like, so what happens when you're not burning your bra? Right. Mm-hmm. And you still got to go to work and feed yourself. What are you going to do? You know, what's going to be your social action as an accountant? Because that's the truth. You got to go pay bills. Like, right. So how are you going to like live these things? It's like I was a reluctant American for years, dude. Like I was born in this country. I did not call myself American for freaking years. Then I was like, OK, I'm Dominican American. And now I'm like, you know what? I like getting in my car. And knowing that those are fireworks and that no one's going to freaking kill me right now, maybe, right? Mm-hmm. And that means that you go and you fight a war that I talk shit about at home because I don't want you to fight it. But I kind of do because I want to get in my car and I want to go to Aveda, right? So it's like, it's really like, it's got a lot of layers to
I mean, the American culture, and me included, is incredibly hypocritical.
Oh, myself
too. I don't think they should fight that war. Hey. Gas is only $3.03. Awesome. Like, rock and roll. Like, so yeah, I mean, we're all hypocrites in that regard. Absolutely.
Yeah, but you know, I think going back to the original topic of higher ed. Woo, that was some thunder. Yeah. Yeah.
I love how it has been completely quiet the last like week, and then it's like the worst right now. Go ahead.
Well, I really firmly believe if you help people understand why they learn the way they learn, that then they'll be more tolerant students. So, for example, once I started telling my students that through brain research, adolescence has been extended to 25. Why has it been extended? Because they've realized up until the age of 25, you process through the amygdala, the emotional part of your brain, longer. You hang out there longer before you go to the cerebral part of your brain, right? And start to think in a higher order way. So when you say that, you go, what does that mean? That means that adolescents respond emotionally in more black and white, polar opposite kinds of conclusions until they can slow down and really think about it. And if we help them understand why they're reacting in the way they're reacting and help them slow down and respond, we can have these kinds of conversations and have them be more aware of their own thinking and not jump to conclusion right away.
Yeah.
Were you giving me a motion to cut off?
No, I was thinking that's a great summary.
She was giving
finale.
You a finale. Yeah, she was giving you a great
that's
high
a great
five.
Finale. Bring it right back to the beginning.
All right. You guys think you're done? This half hour conversation at 51 minutes.
Thanks a lot.
The wine is Everybody. Gone. We're done.
All right. So hopefully we'll be able to get you guys back on the Ladies of Raw.
With
the Raw Ladies.
The Raw.
Woo! We'll come in purple leather next time. You did wear purple, though.
I did. Yeah,
did you do that on purpose?
Did you get her purple leather reference, Jay?
Yes, of course. I know Eddie Murphy. What are you talking about?
All right, I'm just saying.
Just calm down.
Someone the other day did not get the reference.
Just calm down. Calm yourself. Calm yourself.
That's ridiculous. All right, so that is it for us. Thank you for listening. I'm not sure how I'm going to set this up because there's a third part to this, which is I am going to sit down with two millennials and get
and open and up
then
the sky.
And then God will come down and destroy this podcast. But I'm going to sit down with two millennials to get their perspective on the same topic. So I think that should be pretty interesting.
And then part four is we all fight.
Yeah, you all can do a fist fight in the end. That'll be on
Can
YouTube
we do
though.
It in mud?
Yes. Yes, okay. All right. Wait, what's happening here? All right. All right, that's
the
it.
Ladies of God.
Edit that last part.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you guys next week.